listening to Let's Eat In. I'm your host, Kathy Arway, and we're at Heritage Radio Network at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick. Today's show is brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Check out wholefoods.com. And speaking of food, we have a couple of people today with us who know a bit about that. We've got Robert Sietsma, food writer.
Hey,
thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
You might just want to lean into the mic.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So how are you doing?
Pretty good.
You've been eating a lot of pizza lately.
Who can help eating pizza? It's like everywhere. Yeah, I've been trying to hunt down the dollar slice places just as a public service. There's like probably a dozen of them around town now, and they don't have publicists.
Okay, let me get into that right after I introduce my next guest, who happened to be hanging out here at by the campfire, drying out your shoes
because you.
Telling the story.
Yeah, what
you I stepped in a bucket on accident when I was getting down from a bench.
Okay, so that's Ben Flanner.
And so when I saw him out by the fire here at Roberta's, where they have a big bonfire.
That's a horrible introduction.
His shoe was off, and his foot was up, and his foot was steaming such that one of the waitresses came out to see if he wasn't, like, hurting himself.
He's all a mess. That's
just
all right.
Just trying to be creative.
Very good.
What are you doing here anyway, Ben? Are you just hanging out?
Yeah, I was tending to some seedlings out in the back in the greenhouse.
How are they doing?
Good.
Yeah, it's...
We just got them in. They're just starting to poke through. Not much germination yet, but weather's been perfect. It's been like 80, 85 degrees in those houses.
Cool. So
as you pointed out, it was heated by the effluvia from the cold room, right? Or from the walk-in?
Yes.
Yeah, so they're really conserving energy there.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's a telling sign that spring is on the way. People are getting their feet soaked in buckets because they're farming and tending to seedlings. It's the warmest day so far this year of 2010.
Yeah.
And so, Ben, you're I should mention that you are one half of the farmers of Rooftop Farms and new projects to come here at Roberta's and elsewhere. So... Why don't I get back to that pizza thing? So, Robert, you were eating pizza not for a story for Village Voice, were you right? But just for public service?
Well, it's going to be in the blog, of course. I mean, No one does anything without blogging about it. So, it's an excuse to ride my bicycle around town on these warm afternoons. So, and eat pizza too. So, these places, they serve pizza for a dollar. The pizza runs from being just awful to being really quite good.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
There'd be a huge range.
Because pizza doesn't have to be that expensive, but the typical neighborhood pizza parlor is, you know, $2 to $3 a slice now just for a cheese slice. So it's natural that... I love seeing the people out around the bonfire right in front of us here.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
It's the perfect night for that.
What do you think the food costs are on a $1 pizza slice?
Well, that's a good question. I would say that probably a couple cents for the... I would say that the cheese is probably the most expensive thing, but I bet you could get in... At 15 to 20 cents a slice, you know, to make pizza, because it's really just, well, Kathy would know better as the home cook. Do you make pizza at home?
All the time.
And, you know, as many people know, you can go to nearly any pizza parlor in town and ask to buy a crust, and they'll sell you a crust for $2 or as much as $5, I hear, from certain places.
I don't know about $5 so far, but I can see it. But, yeah, certainly you can ask for unbaked pizza dough, and they'll give you a pie's worth for
right,
a couple
and
dollars.
Right, and one of those balls that they use to make the pizza out of. They'll just sell you that, and
yeah.
You can go home. And yeah, $2 is the standard price in my neighborhood.
Yeah. What's in the crust?
It's a yeast dough. Risen crust. And
they already rose it for
arisen.
You?
Already arisen. It sounds like the Jesus
ready
of pizza
to
crust.
Bake, basically.
It's push the rock
Jesus
aside
Christ.
And come out. Come out
know,
of the cave.
Because these pizza places, they have a million... pies that they're ready to stretch out. They're just constantly rotating.
That's one less
baking pie
they have to
exactly.
do. Yeah, no, they
exactly.
love it.
They don't care. It's just
and they
like,
probably just put the money in their pocket. It's like a tip.
Totally.
It's kind of, yeah.
It's the crust that fell off the truck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And you know, once that's $2, you spend a few, I mean, you can even just make a focaccia and just slather some oil on it, maybe some herbs, press your fingers in those cute little dents in it, and there you go.
And get some of the kind of wild growing chives in Prospect Park and just put those over the top, and man, you got a great taste treat.
Yeah.
I've been talking about those chives lately. You know, it's just wild garlic, wild onion plant. It's the same thing. I mean, why bother?
I think they're like maybe five, at least in the area that I go to get them, which is over by the jerk chicken place. I don't know, Prospect. It's right off of, you know, off of Flatbush in kind of the northern part of Flatbush.
Are there ramps too in spring?
Oh, I haven't seen the ramps because I would be going apeshit if I saw the ramps.
That
would
be pretty crazy.
But there are several. Kathy's right. There are so many different kinds of allium, which is what those are. There's garlic chives. There's these kind of like almost
wild
like
garlic.
Lemon chives. There's all these. They all have different flavors to them, and you can find them all in Prospect Park.
Just don't pick something that looks similar to them, which is these cylindrical things called the Star of Bethlehem, and it's poisonous.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So, no, sorry. Don't go into Prospect Park and pick some chives.
Just know ahead, bring a guide, check it out. I don't know. I wouldn't say go on photos only, too. Just, wow, this is sounding really dangerous.
How's it smell?
No, it's not, you know, because you're
it doesn't not smell like onion. So that's a good telltale sign. If it smells like an allium, like garlic or onion, then you're probably good
to
go.
So it doesn't smell like that at all?
No, it just looks like those, you know, chives.
I think I know which one you're talking about, but yeah, you can tell it's not chives because it's given with, fundamentally, chives have an open center to them. So, you know, it's a hollow shoot, whereas I think this thing you're talking about is kind of more solid. So break it in half and make sure that it has a hole in the middle.
Exactly, and it smells like onions. So
what about our agrarian over here? Do you know how to tell the difference? Or
no, I've never heard of the Star of Bethlehem.
Right, I haven't either.
That's a wild plant. I mean, why would you bother planting it?
Yes,
it's an invasive plant.
Yeah,
it's gonna kill you and the rest of your other plants.
True.
Have you guys ever gone mushroom hunting?
I have, but only in the presence of a person that's more knowledgeable than me. But people claim that really the trick lies in just learning how to recognize three or four different species and going after them. So I do a lot of hiking and I've never seen any morels. I mean, I would go, you know, apeshit if I did see them. But no, wouldn't that be great to like stumble upon some incredibly expensive? What I do recognize and have harvested is that a hen of the woods.
Oh, yeah. Hen of the woods.
Yeah.
My buddy Frank was getting those in Jersey.
Those were actually chicken of the woods. I remember I was on a...
Oh, that's right.
Or chicken mushroom. They have several different... Yeah.
The chicken and the hen.
I think they're all named for the same thing. It's a thing that... It's a mass mushroom that just looks like... It can be like the size of a small dog.
And it's like fluorescent orange, too.
Yeah, it's kind of orangey, yellowy. And the beauty is that when you cook it up, that... Just like shred it and saute it. It looks exactly like pieces of chicken.
It tastes like chicken too. It's meat. It tastes like tough chicken too. Mm-hmm. It's like stringy.
The trick is that chicken doesn't taste like a hell of a lot. I mean, it's the styrofoam of meat substances.
Well, actually, chicken should taste like a lot if you get some nice, well-fed.
But it doesn't have like the taste of goat or something like that has a really distinctive flavor.
It's not gamey.
There's no funk.
Yeah. Especially in the currently popular chicken breast. I mean, if you take away the skin and the bone, it might as well be
You know, if you get your regular grocery store chicken breast, it's going to be pumped up with water anyway, and it's like barely, it's barely a living creature the way they've treated it. So a lot of the times we regard these game birds, which are pheasant and, you know, squab, as really flavorful and having this distinct flavor, but they're not raised in the same manner in as much proportion quantity as chickens tend to be. So when you go to any given farm that might have pheasants or quail or something like that, they're going to have more flavor just naturally because they were not kept in huge, you know, containers. And
of course, and also the fact that that the free range chicken, I mean, I buy mine from this Craig, that guy that comes down from Hoosick Falls.
I love Hoosick,
and that chicken, it is so flavorful, and that's partly because it like gets exercise, and also it's the feed. He's probably not feeding them kind of like some kind of industrial feed that's kind of made of corn.
If they get some protein in their diet, all the better too. Some worms, if they can pasture on worms. Or back at Queens County Farm Museum, the chickens used to eat oyster shells.
That's
or pick at them.
Wow, that is that so locavoric.
Yeah, it was from like Marlowe and Sons. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, what else are you going to do with oyster shells? Because people are slurping them up and tossing them out.
In like the Canarsie Indian area on the seaboard in Brooklyn, they're always digging up these middens, and just the Indians loved oysters. I mean, they just like, there's oyster shells, you know, feet thick, and also
pyramids.
From the early English and Dutch colonies too. It's like free food, and it's right there. At least it used to be.
I think it's fascinating how somebody decided to open it, because I love shucking oysters, but it's not intuitive at all.
I love shucking oysters too.
You have to be lucky, and you have to wish for the best when you go, like, make your stab. It's just.
We're laughing because we're segueing into the dating segment of the show by talking about thrusting.
That's
at
a good time to get into the point of the show, which I kind of leave to the wayside sometimes. But you guys are game for anything, so. Let's talk about cooking and dating. Robert, you had some ideas for things.
One of them is, okay. No, go ahead.
Go for it.
Okay, I'm ready. Here we go.
Robert's got tons of ideas.
Unfortunately. One thing is, you know, maybe your objective is to be cooking at home for your date. But for all sorts of reasons, you don't necessarily want to cook for someone in the earliest stages of the relationship.
It's the thing I hear all the time.
Well, it's just because, you know, you don't want to invite some doofus into your house and discover you don't like him, or that he doesn't like to eat, or that he's like an axe murderer or something. I mean, you need to go out with someone a couple times before you invite them into the confines of your home. I mean, I'm sure that you've taken karate and everything. You could fend off any boy's advances. But still, I think the mother's advice from way back would be, you know, don't invite him into your house, like, ever, probably. But I mean, I would say wait a date or two, and
or don't go into his house, for God's sake.
Well, you can at least run out of his house. What if he like sits down
what
and
if you're trapped
like,
in his lair?
Well, then you're really in bad shape. But with the modern cell phone, I think you could like lock yourself in the bathroom and like start sending out like SOSs or something. Mm-hmm. And your friends could come and break down the door. My only point is
that... Do you think a date would steal something from your house?
Well, he might, or she might. But I think going out to a restaurant is a good way to kind of like meet someone on a neutral territory. I mean, I don't think you necessarily want to be... Like, I don't... When I meet people for the first time, I don't immediately invite them into my house. I mean, that happens when I know that I like them and I know that I can expect them to leave after being there for a while or whatever, and... You know, you want to get to know somebody before you start cooking for them. So
the first place should be a public place.
Better than a meal to, like, you know, really see what's going on. Not only in a meal you can eat seductive foods, but also in a meal you can, like, get to know somebody and see how they react to food.
Yes.
I'm not saying that you should always, like, go out with people who think the same way you do about food at all, but you should at least not go out with a dyspeptic.
I'm going to come back with devil's advocate answers to that one.
Good.
Because that's just one of the all, you know, consuming questions that people have. Don't have a first date at home and cook at home and let's eat in and all that stuff. But we're going to stop with start with a musical interlude that Robert picked. What'd you pick?
It's a song called Barbecue, and it was sent to me by my good friend Charlotte Walton, who works at Merge Records. It's called Barbecue by Wendy Renee.
All right, let's do it. Back on Let's Eat In, I'm Kathy Arway, your host, and we're here with Robert Sietsema and Ben Flanner. Today's show is brought to you by Whole Foods, and it was engineered by Nat Wiener and produced by Jack Inslee at Heritage Radio Network here at Roberta's. And we just listened to a really cool song, Barbecue, By who?
Wendy Renee.
That was really cool.
Please,
are they like an old girl group? Or?
I have no idea who they are.
I really liked it. That was cool.
It was great. Yeah, good
barbecue.
Song.
Barbecue. Yeah.
Well, especially you're going to South by Southwest, so you're going to be eating barbecue all over the place.
You know, I kind of did that last year. I went to Lockhart, Texas. I ate a lot of barbecue.
Did you go to Smitty's?
I went to Smitty's.
Or Kreutz Market or Black's
and Kreutz.
Or Chisholm Trail?
I did this. So,
were you suitably impressed? Or
I was.
Are you somebody that likes sauce with your barbecue?
I wrote all about it. I was eating with Zach Brooks from Midtown Lunch.
Oh, nice.
A lot of barbecue. And I had a great time. And, you know, like the place, it's just a legendary places. And it seemed like the smoke had infiltrated these old places over
like
the
Smitty's you're talking about.
Smitty's,
which is like, it's been a barbecue there for since 1900, and the walls are blackened with smoke.
I was going to say, it has this patina of barbecue smoke. It's actually really, it's like a museum. It's really cool. But actually, my friends from Eraser Shiny Knife, Michael Serino and company, are going to have a vegetarian supper club dinner party to kind of like be an antidote to all the barbecue.
Very nice.
You're supposed to eat. So I'm going to be cooking for that.
Great. What are you cooking?
A bunch of stuff. I can't even tell you. It's still in the works. We're going to get some local food down there.
Cool.
Figure it out. Yeah. So, I was going to counter your...
No, I was saying, just to fill the listener in who just joined us, I was saying that I don't think it's a good idea to invite a guy into your house right away to cook for him, that I better to go to a restaurant the first time, and then when you find out how he responds to food or whatever, then you could invite him home. But like I say, what if he's dyspeptic?
How about the first date as a drink?
That could be good.
How about the first date as a movie or a play?
That would be fine.
A music show.
Yeah. But still, food is what this show is about, so food, kind of, we have to talk about.
Yeah, good idea.
How about a picnic in a park?
That would be absolutely ideal. That would be kind of halfway in between. It would be like you're using the outside as your own restaurant, and you're also providing food that you've selected. However, how much better? I mean, I'm not into testing dates, because I think that that's horrible. I don't think you should really try to find someone that's compatible with you at all, just somebody that's interesting.
And have a fun time.
Yeah, so, but you could easily say, you know, we'll each bring two things as a surprise.
I think that's
a great
idea.
And not saying, and then, you know, you might bring a foie gras torchon and an arugula salad made with wild arugula and like cherry tomatoes you grew yourself in one of those upside down things, and he might bring Doritos and Slim Jims.
I'm laughing because I remember a friend who's telling a story about how she brought something like Tostitos and salsa. And this guy she went on a picnic with, just exactly as we described, had brought something like some elaborate soup in a thermos. It was hot, and she was so like embarrassed to describe what was in it. He's like, "Yeah, I put some ginger and cilantro." Like,
oh my god!
Yeah, I don't know.
So he was engaging in culinary overkill to try to impress her.
Exactly.
Yes. Because the beauty of food, it has to be the right thing at the right time. And some incredibly elaborate soup on a first picnic date would be overkill.
Well, I don't know about that.
I'd keep it simple.
Could you save it by picking wild scallions from Prospect Park?
I think you could
eating them right on the spot, make your salad,
picking your nose while you're eating the soup. But no, it's just...
You know what? Any way you cut it, a first date is going to be a bit of a crapshoot.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
Whatever you do, it's going to it might suck totally. And if it's
I think
in your
the chances
home,
of suckage are probably relatively high. Like
90%.
Ooh. That echoes what Elaine said on Seinfeld, that like 90% of the guys are undateable.
They're all just getting together because of alcohol.
That's right. They're on the same team.
That was Jerry's
Yeah,
team.
Yeah.
I miss that.
Yes. Yes, it is so... Okay, yeah, the chance of suckage is high, but still, I think to try to beat someone over the head with some overly creative... I mean, part of meeting a person halfway is thinking, well, maybe they have rather bland tastes. So make something that's really good and nicely salted, mm-hmm. but not something that's filled with kind of like pyrotechnics. I mean,
even
as a person that loves food, if I went out on a date with a girl that hit me with something that like
keep
embarrassed me, yeah.
Ginger and cilantro, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yes, no, you couldn't
all...
use ginger and cilantro in the same recipe.
Come
you could
on.
Use one of those, not for a date.
Yeah, not for just meeting
for
somebody.
The picnic date,
we should all be listening to Robert because he's actually the only one out of the three of us who's married.
That's because I'm a Midwesterner. We don't know how to like.
Ben's a Midwesterner
too.
Yeah. You're not married?
Not married.
Oh.
Unmarried.
Oh my goodness! Will you want me to look for someone for you? Or?
Keep an eye out.
This guy is super eligible. He is like a dreamboat. I mean, as I'm sitting here, there's girls pressing their face against the glass of the control room.
I know who my friends are.
How did you win Gretchen over?
I had to chase her. I mean, I met her in Madison, where I was in grad school, and she was an undergrad. I wasn't her TA, but I met her, and she like hated me for the first 3 years. And then she moved to Boston, and I like went to see her a couple times. And then she moved to New York and said, if you want to be with me, you have to come to New York. And I said, I would never move to New York in a million years.
Wow.
As a Midwesterner, I'm like petrified of New York.
Wow.
So, but then she said, if you want to get with me, you have to like go to New York. And that was in the old days of the East Village. And when I first arrived, like half the neighborhood was burned out. It was just like, and there were people, her
Needles
and all her friends
out.
From the tenement were sitting in this empty burned out lot with a bonfire cooking like hot dogs or something. It was like Boy Scout troop from hell.
Took Roberta's 25 years later.
Exactly, yeah. Yes, just like this, actually, yeah.
Science experiments going on in the corner? I don't know. Something
what is
fermenting
in, I'm hoping
in
it's like
humongous
LSD.
Gallons
oh,
on top of a
honey.
Turntable.
That's from Brandon's hive he just was harvesting in the last couple
okay
days.
That's from Brandon Hoy's hive.
You can't make this kind of thing up.
No,
you can't
like,
make this shit up.
Yeah, that was a colony that actually passed away over the summer.
No, not
it
from that bee disease thing.
CCD?
Yeah.
I don't know if he diagnosed it as that. I think they froze. We'll let Brandon discuss that in detail, but he said it looked like looking at like the lost city of Pompeii.
Oh
he
no!
Dead bees
so we're
the
looking
it's
at
hive
a
collapse
lot
disease.
Of tanks so in the corner of this recording studio
CCD.
That are the poor relics of this hive.
Right behind the boar's head.
Right behind the boar's head.
And that's not Boar's Head Cold Cuts. The Boar's Head Cold Cut factory is like a block down. So no, this is a real boar's head with one snaggly tusk.
Yeah, so these are two different parts of the hive equipment. One of them is where they filter out the comb. You see that upper ledge with the comb?
Yeah.
And then pure honey down below, and then that's a centrifuge.
Oh,
it
man.
Around.
That's amazing.
Can we get some honey?
Should we go try some?
Yeah, let's do it. What were we just talking about?
We were at our first date picnic, which we decided
aww.
Was the perfect... only in the good weather, though.
Yeah, well, you know... I mean, everything's better in good weather. That's
it's
why
true.
I don't know. It's cozy, though. I mean, if you have the means to have a campfire or you have a fireplace at home, then by all means, that adds some kind of natural stuff.
Another bias I have toward that is that I would really want to be with someone that was kind of an outdoorsy type who didn't want to just like sit at home all the time. So even creating like an active date situation rather than a passive one would be good.
Well, exactly. That's why I think the cooking is more active rather than going out to eat. And
now, isn't a picnic more collecting than cooking?
That's a good point, though. It is active.
Yeah, yeah.
Cooking.
That's right. Well, if you could find a barbecue pit and cook during the date, imagine the delight of that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what you would cook. On a date.
Well, I think if you wanted to telegraph foodiness, you'd like bring a small pig and break it down right there by the fire and like hoist some pork chops.
A whole suckling pig for two people. Why
well,
not?
You'd have leftovers, yeah.
There you go. You could,
Ben, what
you
would
could
you
cure
make?
Something that you could cure the belly, rub salt on it with them.
Well, that's cool.
Another thing like... Yeah, you could use the lard to cure it, and you could kind of like whip it up for like, you know. I mean, the sky's the limit to the stuff you could do.
A fat moose for.
Yeah. Or you could collect grubs and barbecue those or something.
All right, take it from the only one who's married here. Make some. Take a whole suckling pig. Use all parts.
Well, why am I the only one married? I mean, isn't anyone getting married anymore?
No. Unfortunately. Ben, are you getting married?
No, not anytime soon.
So,
I'm glad one of us is married, though.
Yeah. What would you cook on a date meal?
What would I cook?
Yeah.
I think... Let me think about that for a second.
And this guy has cooked at that place you took me, the coffee shop.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yeah. Greenpoint Coffee Shop. What happened to that?
It's over? Dead.
Yeah, that was a shame. The lease ended. The landlord didn't want to re-sign the lease. And they ended up closing about a month early.
You guys were great. The food...
It was
guys,
good, wasn't it?
You guys killed it.
It was really fun.
I would have never...
John Meyer over there.
Everything was so good that came out of that kitchen.
The kitchen was so small.
The kitchen
was
retardedly small.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't say that.
It was brutal. We were just on top of each other. And sometimes there'd be three cooks prepping plus a dishwasher in about 20 square feet.
Let's put it this way. The kitchen was intellectually challenged.
I remember Robert and came back and he said, "You guys are doing all that from here?"
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It's funny because the first thing I hear from people who are like, "Oh, you cooked in for 2 years. Your kitchen must be huge." And like, you know, I never cook in because my kitchen is not that great or I don't have that much stuff. I'm like, you don't need anything. I mean, you guys busted out a whole dinner service for, 15 tables.
With some elaborate stuff, with a lot of extra finishing.
Oh, the food was amazing. You guys had that great, pasta dish and...
what I'd make for a date.
Pasta's good.
Romanesco with the sage pesto.
That's good. Or puttanesca, if you want to, telegraph.
Why puttanesca? Because it's spicy and it's pungent and fishy.
You know what puttanesca means?
It's like two
horrors. No,
it's the horrors sauce.
What?
The idea is that women women of prodigious appetites like things that are salty and fishy and or maybe it. I don't know what puttanesca means in that context, but yes, it's supposed to be symbolic and it's powerful because the idea is that kind of food is supposed to be like sexual in a way. It's supposed to be lusty is what they call red sauced Italian food.
Because it's fishy and it's spicy and
yes,
pungent.
Exactly. And that's supposed to be like
sour and
flavors
yeah.
of sex, I guess.
Whoa. What about puntarellas? You know that Italian green?
Yes.
Same word?
I just started some puntarellas.
Did you?
That sounds like punta.
With an N. Puntarellas.
I got Kathy to laugh.
this is getting a little out of hand.
I'm
okay,
sorry,
so
yes.
I think that's what you should cook on your date meal. I don't know if I would
you
cook
make,
that.
You make puntarella and I'll make puttanesca.
Puttanesca.
Right, there we go.
I need to research my Italian a little bit more to figure out what I would make.
No, but all that kind of food is supposed to be like good date food. It's supposed to be a kind of an aphrodisiac.
Well, I definitely hear spicy.
Remember,
we
started talking about oysters. That's another thing, man. I would bring oysters to a date and shuck those things up and eat the oysters.
That's a classic.
Yeah.
You can do that in California, in Northern California. They have these oyster beds where they have places where you sit down at picnic tables, and as they dredge the oysters up, you open them. They give you the knife. They give you the hot sauce. You bring a bottle of wine, and man, it is just fantastic. What a wholesome activity.
Yeah.
You know what? That would be my first date meal. Just guys, get some the best oysters from Long Island or wherever. Some are close. Get them on ice. And then shuck them open because I think that's really impressive to
It's not that hard, but if you practice once with one of you, first of all, you must have a shucking knife, which is like a knife that's really thick.
It's
but kind of
blunt.
It's like a glorified.
Yes. It's just a blunt.
And one of those thick rubber gloves, and then anything you do will be fine. Like if you slip, it doesn't go through your hand.
I stood outside the Blue Ribbon on Fifth Avenue in Park Slope once and watched this guy shucking oysters for
it's amazing.
10 minutes with Eric Sherman. We just sat there and watched this guy just cranking them out, dipping his knife each time.
Oh, man. And in Louisiana, they have a big contest where they have an official...
Shuck off.
They have an official best and second best oyster shucker.
The best shucker.
Yeah. It is a professional thing to get an oyster. I mean, anyone can open an oyster, but... If you're a professional, you can do it without leaving little bits of shell.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But professional shuckers also know that an oyster just weeps fluid. So
don't lose the juice, yeah.
But you can also, if you just wash, when you shuck it open, if you wash the bits of oyster shell out of there by osmosis, it makes more juice immediately.
Ooh.
Yes, so you don't worry if you lose that first juice, because you're going to get more.
I'm always paranoid about losing the juice.
Well, better to get rid of the shell in there, you know, because that, I mean, I rarely see really professional shuckers in restaurants around this city. I mean, I often, even in fancy places, they act like it's just a skill that every line cook should know. And the fact of the matter is that real oyster shuckers are real oyster shuckers.
Sure.
They're mother shuckers. I mean, they are so good.
Well, they have to do it quick.
A friend was using an oyster shell as a soap dish the other day.
Nice. Cool. Or ashtray as the standard, you know. Yeah. What if you find a pearl?
They've got to have some more uses to them. I mean, it's an oyster. Like, you know, you can make a shell midden in your backyard.
Well, now, what about all these people making, using that chemical? If you blacken it, then it becomes that calcium carbonate thing. And,
oh, yeah, calcium carbonate.
And then
color.
You use it to make soap with, like, cast off lard and tallow and stuff.
So even oyster soap.
Or maybe that's clam shells.
Whatever.
I'm lost. Kind of
the chemist didn't come to the show tonight, but we had
I guess that's the next step, soap and the aphrodisiac powers of, you know, aromatherapy.
Well,
that's not
that
the
Palacio
show.
Empire, that Jory MD is making soap out of the lard that you know, that they have left over from fatty crab and all that stuff.
Moisturizing, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Imagine extra rubbing super lard into your hand. How delightful that would be.
Yeah. Keep you warm, too.
Yeah, well, that's right, yes.
All right, so we heard it from the only guy who's married here, Robert Cizma.
Happily married.
Yes. Well, so happy to hear the story about you hunting down Gretchen between several states.
It's adorable.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
She's a Wisconsinite, too. So.
Nice. You've been in New York since then for like 20-odd years or so.
I know. Sorry.
Okay, now you're getting a call. We got to wrap up, so thanks again, Heritage, Jack, and Nate, and Nat, sorry. We'll be back next week. Ben Flanner, thanks again to you. And I'm your host. Totally. Thanks for coming. I'm your host, Kathy Arway. We'll see you next week. Thanks.